Hey, this is Mick from the band Europe, and you're listening to Seattle Wave Radio.
Standing by for launch command, T-minus 2 minutes. Standing by for launch command, T-minus 1 minute.
Go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
Filled with chaos where the dreamers struggle to find their way, there is a light. In an industry riddled with sacrifice and self-doubt, there is a voice. At a time when we need one another more than ever, there is hope. Houston, we have a program.
Welcome to Houston, brought to you exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio and recorded on Squadcast, the ultimate podcast collaboration platform. All right, kids, as you know, I kind of went into fan mode with Car Park North for our last episode. And I will tell you that I've been keeping in touch with Lau, and we're set up for October while Jessica is over there on tour. We're going to have mojitos and beers. So, yes, I said mojitos.
I hope. I hope you're taking Cracky along for that one.
I if you want to come with me, you can, for sure.
Right on.
But today is the first hundreds of podcasts and independent artists and rock stars. Today is probably one of my favorite podcasts and go down in history. Very sentimental about this particular guest, not only because he's a fellow keyboard player, but because he made an impact on my life when I started. When I went from trumpet player to keyboard player back in the day. But we're going to get into all that. But so today's guest, coming from Stockholm, Sweden, fellow keyboardist and badass, spent lots of times on the Billboard charts, been parts of tons of albums, probably wrote and performed one of the most well-known keyboard hooks ever written. I don't think there's a person on the face of this planet that does not know this song. Today's guest is a keyboardist from Europe, Mr. Mick McCaley.
Mick! Wow. I don't know what to say.
Well, I'll tell you what I know what to say is, you bring up names like Rick Wakeman, okay? Like Keith Emerson.
Right.
John Lords. Kevin Moore from Dream Theater, Jordan Rudess. I mean, we could go down the line. And brother, man, you're in that group of keyboardists. And I mean, I'm 54 now. And, you know, with all the musicians I know that are young and old, everybody knows that. Da-da-da-da. I mean, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
That is bad. You're always going to be known as that guy.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's and some people love it. Some people don't love it so much, but I tell you one thing about that song. I mean, that's a song that we always play live, right? And I just have to say that people, we always get the question, do you still enjoy playing that song? And to be honest, we just still love playing that song. It never get bored of it because it's not our song anymore. You know, it feels like it's the crowd that owns the song, and every time they never let us down. It's like a big party when we play that song. So
I have a question about the song too. I was reading, maybe you can verify this for me, that even with the band, there was a little debate whether that should be the lead single or not. Some guys weren't sure if you thought it was the hit it was going to be, and others had some doubts.
You're absolutely right, and that rumor includes me. I have to say, because we were sitting down, we had just sort of mixed the whole album, and in Burbank. No, that was in just outside San Francisco, in Berkeley, and we had just mixed the album, and the question was sort of popping up. Well, guys, what do you think should be the first single? And somebody suggested The Final Countdown. And I remember clearly me saying, no way, not that song. That's not a single. That's not a hit. You can play that on radio. You see, it's not a real chorus. It's just a synth melody. So, but I was proven wrong and happy about that.
Well, that's earlier how you talked about the song becoming the fans. That's spoken like a true artist. But Cracky, way to try to get some controversy stirred up right at the beginning of the interview. I love it.
Thank you very much. Hey, we jumped into the song, so.
No, yeah. I love it.
It's something I always wondered about, yeah.
Well, we know that Mick does not have a big ego now, because it's like, that song is like, I mean, the song starts out with a big boom. I mean, come on, it's keyboard, and the keyboard player's in front of the record label going, nah, we'll do that other song.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey man, what a great way to start the interview off. And Mick, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and to chat with us and give us some behind the scenes stuff. And really wanted to focus on you. I know a lot of times rock bands, the lead singer gets interviewed, but hey, us keyboard players, brother, we gotta stay together.
Oh yeah.
So let's talk on a personal level. On the pandemic, how are you and your family doing? How has this thing affected you guys?
Oh, well, thank God or whoever, we're healthy. We haven't sort of no one in my family has been sick yet, and we're doing fine. I mean, we're not able to go somewhere else and record. We're not able to play shows and meet our fans, which is but on the other hand, it's an interesting situation because you realize, you actually very much realize, you have time to realize what you're missing most of all. And that's really, that's, if you can find something good about this whole thing, I think that's a good thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, good. That's fantastic. You're right. I found myself in the same way. I know Cracky and I talked about it. It's like, it's that one thing, Mick, that we all say, God, I wish I had more time. Well, here you go.
Yeah.
It was a lot. Yeah. I mean, here you go. Be careful what you wish for. Well, I know that I was staying up on top of Friday Nights with Europe, and that was pretty cool. Whose idea was that? Was that the management's, or was that your guys's? Or
I think it was Joey's idea.
Was it?
Actually, me and Joe was talking about, we have to sort of keep something going. We have to give our fans something. And we started off with sort of doing lockdown sessions or whatever they were called. And we actually did record things in our homes and put it together. And Kevin Shirley actually mixed it. And we sort of put that out 5 Fridays in a row. And then we thought, well, we don't have anything else. What can we do? Well, we can share and give sort of ideas to people. What if they haven't heard this album? Okay, this is my favorite album. This is Joe's one of our favorite albums. So we're going to keep doing this for some time now. And giving, you know, it's a kind of a sort of fun thing. We give a clue on Wednesdays and you have to guess, okay, this is a clue. I see a picture here. And people sort of send in their guesses on what album can this be. And then on Friday nights, we sort of reveal it. And everybody can choose whatever album. Well, we sort of concentrated it to rock albums, actually. It doesn't say that, but that's how we did.
So you didn't get out your Sade collection?
So, I'm sorry. No.
No. Well, Ray, you should listen in this week. It's one of your favorite groups is the album of the week.
I have not checked it out this week. I must say, I've actually been in the recording studio working on our next single. But I will. I'll check it out. I will.
I'm not going to ruin anything because this will air after this Friday night. But Animals by Pink Floyd.
Yeah,
ooh,
that's what I guessed too. I don't know, but that's absolutely what I guessed that it was. Yeah.
I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, Mick.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I mean, wait, hang on a second.
Ah, is that Pulse?
No, it's Atom Heart Mother. It's an old one.
Oh yeah. Sorry, the one you pulled off the wall.
This one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, that's old school right there. That's that's good stuff. You are a Pink Floyd fan. I think the only Pink Floyd album that I have a struggle, I struggle listening to is Oomba Goomba. And it's okay. Woo.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I can sort of agree with you, but I mean, I have to think, about 30 years ago, I listened to it the last time. And I mean, that was about the time when I was smoking a lot of, and you know,
cigarettes.
Cigarettes. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I thought it was strange, but interesting. No, it's not a good album. I think my favorite is Wish You Were Here, I'd say.
Oh, nice.
I love that one.
I go back and forth between. For the longest time, I was a Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah,
I just vacillate back and forth between Dark Side of the Moon, Saucerful of Secrets, and Division Bell. It just depends on kind of how I'm feeling or if I'm pissed off at Cracky or not.
Yeah, I mean that's great. That's from three totally different eras, right?
Yep.
Of Pink Floyd.
Exactly.
Yeah, I actually like the Piper at the Gates of Dawn as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a great album too. Yeah, one of the things that got Saucer Full of Secrets back into my spectrum was a good friend of mine, a saxophone player, was like, why are you guys always, you know, if we do covers at shows, it's normally a Pink Floyd song.
Okay.
And he's like, man, this Pink Floyd thing, what the hell is wrong? You got to get more saxophone in there. And it's like, brother, have you listened to Pink Floyd? you know, it's like, come on. And so, yeah, now he doesn't say anything. But anyhow, cool. That's very cool, brother. Yeah. So, hey, I want to set up for the audience a little bit, just to give them a little bit of context as to you beyond the keyboard player and Pink Floyd lover and all this and husband and all that. So we were talking a little bit off air before we started the interview. You and I actually had a stint in one another's lives back in the late 80s. And funny enough, I don't know whether I'm honored or terrified that you remember, because you remember something that I don't remember. But so for our listening guests, and our Europe guests who are fans of Europe, I apologize. So back in the late 80s, I was in the military. The entire band that I was in, our band name was Ambition. And we were all in the military. And we went and saw Europe in Heidelberg. You guys just come off of 14 months or so with touring with Def Leppard with Hysteria. And after the show, our German friends took us to a hotel in Heidelberg and said, yeah, we're just going to go there for drinks. Well, in walks Europe. And I was like, you son of a bitches. Anyway, fast forwarding, you guys came into the bar. Joey, I remember going over to he went over to the bar and kind of sat by himself. And you could see he was just kind of coming down. And but you guys were all your tour manager. I think you said his name was Bo. Mm-hmm. He introduced us. And I just remember how that evening kind of started out, is because you got up and shook my hand and super friendly and approachable and took me over to the bar and we had a drink. And then our tour manager, like I said, we can't mention the name of the drinks again, but had the drinks with the 151 and the Kahlua or whatever that lit on fire. And we ended up going around and we saw you guys for about four or five more shows in Germany and in France, and showed up with those drinks in the hotel. And the funny thing is, like I said, I don't know whether I'm terrified or not. The fact that, if you want to retell that little story you told, that you actually said, well, I don't remember a lot, but I remember this particular cover band in the late 80s. And I'll let you take it from there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we toured a lot in Germany in those days. And there was this guy who told me about his band who played covers, and band had a girl singing for them, doing the lead vocals. And this guy told me that the band covered the song Carrie, which is a ballad. And it's about this girl called Carrie, and the chorus is very much Carrie, Carrie, and so on. She felt uncomfortable, this guy told me, that she felt uncomfortable singing about the girl, being a girl herself. So she asked if she could sing Gary instead. And that was your band.
Yeah, that was my band. Yeah. So any of the Europe fans out there, yes, unfortunately, he told that story. But I will tell you, I'd forgot that. You remembered us, which was real super cool. But
with all the flaming shots, I'm surprised you guys remember anything.
Yeah, I tell you. Well, there was a lot of them, and that particular girl, her name was Anne Marie, and we had lost our lead singer because there was an air disaster at Ramstein Air Base. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh yeah.
But our lead singer was a medic, and he got elbowed in the throat. So we found this gal who could sing great. And unfortunately, that story was true. And I must have had a lot to drink that night, because if telling the guy, you know, who wrote that song, that anyway, but hey, if it gave you some good laughs over the years, then we're good.
Oh yeah. I'm still telling that story. I think it's fantastic. It's hilarious. Really.
And for anybody not familiar with that was a top 10 worldwide hit.
Oh yeah.
So, it was. Yeah, to be changing that up, it's, yeah, yeah, it takes a lot of
It takes a lot of gumption. Yeah, it was, you know, I got to say, and thank you for sharing that, Mick. I'm honored that you remember us. But anyway, we had some good conversations. But I will tell you, Cracky, you ever get a chance to see him, Joey, back in the day, it's like he'd come out swinging that microphone and his hair. I mean, it was from the start of the moment that Europe hit the stage till the moment they left. I mean, you guys put on, I mean, and we saw you 4 or 5 times and the show was always the same, meaning just high energy. There wasn't one lull.
No. I mean, Joe is really fantastic, and I don't know how he does it, but he just gives 110% every show. I mean, sometimes he even get a little bit too overexcited, but he's just he wants to give everything every time he's on stage. So I really admire that guy.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy.
He's okay.
He's okay. What is he thinking, Gary? But a lead singer is only as good as the band that allows him that freedom. And you guys were on. I mean, I remember at that time you were up on a riser.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, it was pretty cool. You guys did a show. I think it was in Mulhouse, France. And your tour manager told us to stay afterwards. And you actually brought myself and another one of our friends on the band up on stage and showed us your rig up there. But that was pretty cool. Hey, let's back up a little bit. So obviously people get it. You are the man behind those 20 powerful notes. So that's who you were. That's who you are. How did you get your start? Did you start out as a keyboard player or?
I played guitar and keyboards, but I was much better at playing keyboards, really. I mean, I still write songs on guitar, but I'm not a good guitar player, if you know what I mean. I can play like this, but I wouldn't be able to do it myself. So, yes, I started kind of early. We had a piano at home, so I played on that, and we had a guitar as well, so I tried that out. But I find a keyboard easy to, you really get a view of all the notes, and you can sort of, it makes it easy to visualize what's going on in music. You know what I mean.
I do. I've tried playing guitar over the years. The only good thing about learning a little guitar is it allows you to really connect and communicate with your fellow musicians and understand why maybe they don't like the key of E flat. But yeah. But you can see the theory. But yeah, no, for sure. You know, I can't remember what song it is, but there's a song that you did back in the day that was very classical sounding. Did you have a classical? When you started doing the piano, did you have any classical training or play any classical music?
No, I took lessons for about a couple of years, maybe, but it wasn't classical. I was probably too young to really do that, and I don't read music, so I'm lousy at that. But no, the thing is, I found going to take classes in learning how to play, and you didn't get to play what you wanted to play. That was really, I found that very frustrating. And also you get homeworks, you have to practice at home. And I hated homeworks. I mean, I got it from school. So I didn't want to have any more homework, especially on music. I didn't want to play. So I actually played guitar as well for a year or so with a teacher. And that actually gave me some good finger picking. But, apart from that, you know, I would say I'm self-taught, although some of the stuff I learned from going to classes, music classes, in piano might have done something good.
Yeah, might have been something good. Says
no, but what I'm saying is, it's the passion that really makes you into something.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean?
I do. I've had a considerable amount of young musicians around here ask me for lessons or to do whatever, and I always tell them, said, you know, hey, before you get into this thing, said this is music is not notes on a page. It's not, you know, it's a lot of things, but it's passion. It's like, what do you think about when you go to bed? What do you think about when you wake up in the morning? Is it going through your veins? Because at the end of the day, there's the guys who sight read, the guys who don't, the guys who do both. It's the whole spectrum of what everyone does. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, hey, you just sit down and do your thing. So you can't read music. Who cares? I mean, no. Beatles didn't.
I know G. They're not G. That's it.
But yeah. Oh, geez, my God. Well, Cracky doesn't play guitar, but he has a guitar.
Okay.
Yeah, people ask me if I'm a guitar player, and I tell them, "Well, I own a guitar."
Okay.
Yeah. Same. I've noodled around a bit, but
are you just being modest, or?
Oh no, no,
The nice thing is,
just by trying though, I can better appreciate what the real players are doing. So just enough to appreciate what other people are putting out there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So keyboards. Awesome. That's a lot of times you get, it seems like most musicians, I kid you not, man, they're like, yeah, I started out as a drummer. And then, using all four extremities in my body was too difficult. So I moved on. Do you remember the first group you ever played with?
Oh yeah, definitely. We played Black Sabbath covers like dum 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 dum. Although that
nice.
that was tricky, but you know, the easy, the slow things, and you start. I was a guitar player back then, so
right.
I played guitar and sang in that band, and the drummer in the band. Some years ago, he sent me. We apparently recorded some of it, and so I got a tape of it. And I hadn't even, I don't know what it's called, but you know, when you're a kid, as a man, you have a high voice, and then you sort of change into a lower voice. What's that called?
Puberty. Life.
Yeah, it has to do with that.
Right.
Absolutely. And I'm sort of in between that at that time. So that really sounds weird. but we were passionate about music, and we just loved trying. We were trying. That was our first sort of stumbling steps into rock and roll.
Well, that's cool. You had a good time though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Those are the kind of tapes that, when Europe gets together and does stuff for the fans, all of you need to do is like reach back into the archive and go, so check this out.
I don't know about that.
You know, people might look at you differently, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't really care. I think it would be a good thing to do. Seriously. Yeah. Why not? Why not?
We have to take everything that happens in life with a grain of salt. I just put out when I do promotion for my band or whatever I'm doing, sometimes I put out some corny stuff. And the other day I was looking through some pictures, just reminiscing, and I put together a little collage of what I look like in the 80s all the way up to now.
Okay.
And it blew up. People love that stuff, yeah. Man. So I'm just saying, I'm not saying put that album out, but I mean, you put that out there, I bet people actually, all kidding aside, it would probably really endear you to people. That's cool though. Black Sabbath. That's very cool. So fast forwarding into, what we originally got to know you for, is Europe. So doing research, 1984 is about the time that you joined Europe.
Correct.
Okay. And how did that go down? Was it an audition or was it kind of hanging out and they knew you were a keyboard player?
I had my own band, besides Europe. And a lot of other bands in the suburb just north of Stockholm, where we all grew up. And they had just released, Europe had just released the second album, which is Wings of Tomorrow, where Joey played a lot of keyboards. So there was a lot of keyboards on the album, but he didn't want to do that on stage. So they were looking for someone who could sort of, as a hired gun, just sort of fill out the keyboards on the tour that we're doing for the Wings of Tomorrow album. And there was no audition or anything. I think I was the only keyboard player they knew. So they asked me to join, and I was like, I don't know. You know, I have my own band now, so I'm and we're going to make it huge. So I'm not sure about this. But then I thought, well, actually go out, because we were just playing. I mean, my band at that time was just playing, you know, local gigs. There was no gigs outside our suburb. So then I think, okay, this is for a real tour in Sweden only, and Finland, two gigs in Finland as well. So I thought, well, rock and roll, let's try it, because rock and roll, girls, maybe some drugs. Sounds great. Let's do it. Okay. So so I joined as a hired gun for a couple of months, and maybe 2-3 months. And then they asked me if I wanted to join the band. And then I was like, yeah, I like this. Yeah. Free beer. Why not? Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So actually I left my own band and went on with Europe.
Are you by any chance still friends with any of those guys in that band?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I am. There was two brothers in the band, and I speak to one of the guys sometimes, and actually these days during this pandemic, I actually write songs with the bass player of the band.
Oh, nice. That's very cool. I think it's so cool that you can, collaboration is so key. It keeps us sharp, and it keeps that mystery, that curiosity, you know, that's cool to hear, man. Very cool. Yeah. Well, you made a good decision.
Yeah. In retrospect, I did. Although we don't know what could have happened to my band back in that time.
That's right. Have
gotten even bigger.
That's right.
But anyway, I don't regret it. I don't.
Nice. See.
But that also proves that there's a lot of in this business or in the music business, it's not only about, I mean, how good you are. It's also about being, I mean, it's about luck really as well. And being in the right place at the right time, and also being the only keyboard player in the suburb. But apart from that, of course, dedication to music and the love of it, you know?
Well, I mean, no, you nailed it. There is so much. I mean, it's you got to have the skills. You got to put the work in. You know, let's don't forget the songs, right? I mean, the songs are super important. But, I mean, you get that. I always look at the spectrum of Kurt Cobain from Nirvana to Brian May of Queen.
Yeah.
And everything in between, from Nirvana to Queen and everything in between. It's like there's you know, hundreds of millions of people in the world who have different tastes, and it's a great thing. And I agree with you. I know Cracky was shaking his head too. I know that the Mick McKaylee Fab Four would have blown the charts out. So
they could have been the next Rolling Stones.
Yeah, exactly. You never know.
Nope.
Hey, so before we go on to the next question, so that band, what I'm just curious, what was the makeup of that band?
What do you
mean? Like two guitars, bass, drums, lead singer. What?
Oh, it was a five piece to start with. It was
five piece?
Yeah. So cool. It was bass, guitar, keyboards, drummer, singer.
Okay, cool.
And then actually we added in the end, there was the brothers I told you about in the band, they had a friend who played keyboards, sort of, and they wanted him to join as well. So I said, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so there you go.
In the end it was a six piece.
Nice. There you go. Well, yeah, they, whatever gets the job done. I mean, in this day and age with, you know, with backing tracks and all this kind of stuff, it's kind of come full circle, because keyboard players are still, I mean, they're still a dime a dozen. I mean, in our area here, Mick, in the, you know, Pacific Northwest, there's like eight of us. Now, there's more than eight, but there's eight of us that are known, and we're constantly being asked to do session work or play in this, you know, casino band or, you know, no thanks, but,
okay.
but all this kind of different stuff, but, no, that's cool. So, hey, the final countdown, we talked a little bit about that, you know, about the song, et cetera. You and Joey wrote that, correct?
The final countdown.
Yes.
No, I have to be honest here. I wish I was involved, but it was actually Joey writing it on his own. Although really? He borrowed the keyboard from me before I joined the band to actually write the intro, because that was made years before the album came out.
Mm. Very nice. Yeah, because
Raymond, you're wrong. It's not very nice, because imagine if I have been part of it, I could have had a much better car than I had today, you know?
Yeah.
I wish I was part of it. So no, not nice. No, not at all. I wish.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I always thought, because there's some, and you know how information out there is, it's not always right, right? And there's a couple different places that actually cite the Final Countdown. It says Joey Tempest, Mick McKaylee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think on a Wikipedia page, but I just, you know, it's kind of one of those things, and I guess we assume a lot, but the finesse of that song and stuff, I mean, you, the way you play it obviously plays a lot into that as well, too, and how you look behind those keyboards, damn it.
Yeah.
So cool. Well,
I'm also curious if Mick is wearing pants right now. because he's a real fan. I was watching some of their promos for the Friday night thing, and there's one where he comes out. He's a fine dresser. He knows how to dress, man.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At the end of the promo, he walks off, and he's just wearing boxers on the bottom. There.
Yeah.
He's pantsless right now.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of those I've seen. Yeah, he's brazen.
You know what? I just thought that was like a sign of the times. When nobody's actually going to work, going to the office, everybody sits at home, they dress up here because that's what you can see, you know? And then they have nothing underneath. So I thought there was a sort of just sort of playing on the sign pandemic going on, you know?
It was good. It was good.
Yeah. Well, we now Thank know you. what you're watching for, Cracky, for sure. So what, hey, if, I just had a question. I mean, you guys have had nine albums?
Numbers is not my thing. I have no idea. Nine? Yeah.
I think it's around nine albums. That is a lot of stuff. I always wonder, you know, when a band comes out and you have so many hits and, you know, songs charting on billboards and all that, what's it like in the studio after you have such big success? Is the pressure, I mean, do you feel any more pressure because of those hits? Or is it just, no, we're going back at it, we're going to get in here, and we're going to write some great songs? Always curious about that, what the behind the scenes is on that.
Well, I think especially after the success of the Final Countdown album, Joey wrote 95% of those songs on the album. And I really think that he was struggling with the pressure of coming up with a even bigger hit than that. So I think he felt the pressure more than anyone. And I didn't want to be in his shoes at that time. But yeah, absolutely, that happens. But fortunately, these days, there's not any pressure anymore. We do our own records. We own the records. Nobody is telling us what to do. We have no expectations from anyone outside the band, really. So I think we're in a very good place today, even though we're not selling as much as we did. Well, no one does, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I think we're in a very good position these days because we can do whatever we feel like doing, which is a very nice feeling. I think the pressure was really on Joey back in the days, and I don't think it was a good thing to have. You know?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, you guys, it's like with that expression of you getting your 10,000 hours as an artist, you know, to kind of get a grasp on your instrument. You guys did 10 times that as far as, you know, getting your time out there touring, going through all the stress and all that stuff. And I'm happy to hear you say, you know, tell us where you are now, because you guys should. I mean, you put a lot of time in and a lot of great content out there and are still putting out great content. Yeah, good for you guys. Do you, you know, and obviously anybody out there can get on in Google and they can type in McKaylee. And by the way, do that. It's really cool. You find out some cool information. But so there's information out there. People can find out other bands you've played with when Europe went on hiatus and stuff. But what is that? I played in a few different groups, and I know what it's like going from one group to the other. But what's it like being in a group that is on top of the world? And then you guys take a little break, which bands take breaks. And then you go out and playing with other groups. Is it a nice break, or is it just, you know, something that's kind of hard to grasp?
I can only speak for myself, and I think Joey felt the same thing. I think it was fantastic because I believe that if you just playing in same band with the same people over and over again, you sort of, you don't broaden your visions or your perspective or whatever. I think it's really, I love playing with different people or if it's just jamming or if it's, because I always learn something. I always get, and you know, I get another perspective on stuff and sort of, it's just a way of broadening your vision. And I really enjoy doing that. And I think it's important as a musician to do it.
I'm going to have Mark cut that part out. I'm going to blast it. I think most artists tend to believe what you say, but I've actually been, I've had people get on my case about that, saying, why can't you just focus on one band and just believe in that? And it's like, it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with what you just said. So thank you for saying that. And it's probably why you are the artist you are, man. You're talking about putting out records. Do you have anything that you're working on? Normally we have, we play music throughout our show. And, you know, we wanted to get to know you. But I thought, you know, if you've got something that you're working on now, you could send it to us and we could play it during this interview.
Okay. Now, actually, what me and my friend from my back in the days band are doing right now is basically writing for other people. So that's nothing that really come out there. But I appreciate it. Maybe I can come back to you.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
As a fan, let me throw something out. I've rediscovered Europe through this podcast now. There's a lot of bands I've lost track of over the years, and it's been great going back now into your catalog. And yeah, people may remember the Final Countdown and the record back then, but man, I've been listening to Walk the Earth, which is the last year record, 2017. Yeah. That thing just rocks. You turn that up to 11. I never hear Final Countdown again, I'm okay, because this record is just amazing. You listen to that and you feel like you can take over the world or at least win the day. And one of my favorites, the last song on the record, a song called Turn to Dust. I think it's one that you wrote, Mick.
Yeah, yeah, that was my idea.
It's a really super cool tune. So anybody who's looking to get back into this band, don't ignore the stuff they've been doing, especially even just going back to that last record. It's pretty amazing stuff. You guys just keep getting better.
Thank you. So, I don't know. I don't know. Almost tears in my eye, almost goosebumps. I don't know. But you know, it's also our last record, which is Walk the Earth. And I really feel very strong about those songs you mentioned, Walk the Earth and also Turn to Dust, which I think, you know, it's just, you have a vision. You're not trying to write a hit. We're just doing something that is close to our hearts or souls, and hearing something like that, cracky. Oh, thanks! I just thank you so much. You go ahead.
Thanks for coming on the show here. You know, it's how I discover a lot of new artists, but it's also giving me a chance to go back and rediscover some of the people out there and the stuff they've been doing.
Yeah,
more recently.
Now you see why we have Cracky, Mick.
Yeah.
This guy, yeah, he brings up a good point. Earlier, I alluded to the 9 albums, and that's one of the reasons. I mean, yeah, Mick, we are so honored that you took the time and just love chatting with you again. We want to get people out there to know, you know, the other artists besides the lead singer, but more importantly, it's like, hey, like Cracky said, go out there and Final Countdown. Great, cool. The reason we talk so much about that is because that's what people come back to. But there is some beautiful music. If you're out there and you want to hear some stuff that will blow your mind and touch your heart, go back and check out their catalog. You know, it's amazing. And, you know, it's supporting music. And it's a lot of times people get so stuck in what people have done. They keep, you know, they don't open their, you know, open the shutters, if you will, to the new stuff. So thank you for shining the light on that, Cracky. You are a good man. You made our guests cry, for God's sakes. Damn it. All right.
Mission accomplished.
Cracky is the Barbara Walters of the podcast. Okay. The next thing he's going to do is he's going to be like, Mick, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? Oh, boy. All right. Hey, man, you've given us a lot of time today. Appreciate it. I would like to before we let you go today, maybe we can have you tell people how they can find out all things Mick McHaley, Europe. Throw anything at us so people after this podcast, they can get on the interweb and look you guys up and check it out more.
Yeah, cool. You can always type in europetheband.com, and then there's a website where there's not much information, but the information you have is what we have on Facebook, what we have on Instagram, what we have on YouTube. So you can get all the links from there. So we're actually, if you look for Europe the Band, just go for that and you'll find it on all different kind of channels.
A lot of good content on YouTube, Europe the Band TV.
Yeah.
I've been having a lot of fun with that as well. So cool. You guys are doing a great job.
Thanks, Ricky.
You know, Mick, you're going to see, you know, exponentially over the next few weeks, you're going to see your YouTube likes dramatically increasing. And just picture this guy with the gray beard over here. Just picture that guy at home, little shaven, with a glass of whiskey going, I got to hear it again. Anyway, Mick, sure honor, yeah. Brother. Thank you for the time. Thank you for remembering our interaction in the 80s. And with that being, man, I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you have the final word today. I just want to remind people, and thank you all the Europe fans for tuning in. We have other podcasts. We interviewed Car Park North out of Copenhagen a few weeks ago. You can find that on Seattle Wave Radio. This podcast is called Houston. It's brought to you exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio. And recorded on Squadcast, which is the ultimate podcast collaborating platform that allows us all to put this together. Today's guest has been Mick McHaley. And Mick, I'm just going to let you have the last word. Any advice for your brothers and sisters out there in the music world that are struggling through this pandemic?
All right. Struggling through this pandemic. I mean, don't give up. There's always music wherever you are. If it's not on the radio, it's within you. So just let it out. And right now there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train, I promise you.
Well said, well said.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anytime anything else comes up, no matter what it is, solo, whatever, you let us know. We'd be happy to have you back on, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Right.
Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, guys. Take care.
Take care. Bye. Thanks, Mick. Time I didn't spend
regrets and guilt remain and constantly control the subtleties. Through years, the tears and skeletons erode. We try to take it back, but the clock ticks on.
Thank you for tuning into Houston on Seattle Wave Radio. Keep an eye out for our next mission, where we interview and unveil behind-the-scenes aspects of some of your favorite artists. Houston, Seattle Wave Radio base here. Our podcast has landed.
Got a belly full of wine. My Majesty's a pretty nice girl. Someday I'm gonna make her mine. Oh yeah, someday I'm gonna make her mine.